song title again?
Anda de lo lebi ele du mare.
Is it rolling, Bob?
Oh, welcome, and it's good to see you again. I am sorry about the mix-up last week. I don't know what happened. My agenda went missing, and I didn't have you down for that time.
That's okay. I have problems with Prick sometimes, and he just hijacked the whole thing. Anyway, I'm just happy to have you back. Let's just move forward, and I'd rather forget that.
Oh, okay. How are you doing? How are you feeling today?
I'm pretty good. There's a couple of things troubling me. I'd sort of like to air out, if I could.
Sure. You take your time, and I'll let you lead the conversation today, if that works for you.
Well, it's this podcasting thing I do.
Mm-hmm.
It takes up an awful lot of my time, and I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Well, tell me a little more about it.
Okay, well, I put out a podcast every week. It's an hour long, but it's not done at once. It's during the course of the week, and so I might talk for 15 or 20 minutes, and then 6 minutes, and then I put it all together, and I put in some music, and at the end, by Friday, I've got everything ready, I feel good when I've done it. When it's finished, it's satisfying.
Mm-hmm. So what seems to be the problem? What part troubles you about this?
Well, it's just all that time when I feel guilty, like I should be doing other things with my time. I mean, I have a wife, I have a son at home, I've got a job for the summer, I've got so many other things that I feel I should be paying more attention to, and yet I just always seem to go to the thing that's easiest for me, which is just, you know, sitting in a park or in my car and talking.
Talking like we're doing now?
Kind of. I mean, I'm aware when I do the podcast, I know there are listeners out there, and I think that's part of it, that I like the fact. And I think that's what bothers me sometimes. Like, am I doing it for other people? Am I doing it for my ego? Why am I doing this? That's what I'm trying to understand.
And do you have an answer? Do you know why you're doing this?
I think it's just part of my nature. Like, before this, I had what they call a zine. And I put that out for 20 years. Like, 20 years. Like, four times a year, I put out. And it was the same thing. I was never satisfied while I was doing it, but it was like a 12-page newsletter magazine that I mailed out around the world. There was only, I didn't care about so much how many people. There was only about 50 people. And it felt really good when it finally came back from the copier or the printer, and wow, I've done something. I've completed. There it is in black and white in my hand. And it was very satisfying. But the moment I'd finished, I needed to start again. I couldn't let go. And it's the same with the podcasting. I put one out, and then immediately it's done, it's finished, and it's like this never-ending chain, and I guess that bothers me a little.
Well, what's the part that bothers you about that? It sounds like it's something that gives you satisfaction. You're probably very good at it. People seem to like that you're doing this. I'm not sure I see where the problem lies.
It, I don't know. There's a certain amount of guilt that just goes with it. That it's... There's a price you pay for everything, and then... I don't know. I just don't know, so I just keep doing it, and I guess that's okay. Maybe there is no problem. Maybe I'm just feeling... It's like that Catholic guilt. I'm not a Catholic, but I feel that there should be something wrong with this. That it shouldn't be giving me this much enjoyment. Oh, I know that's weird.
Let's put that aside for a moment. We're going to come back to that. But what else is going on in your life at this point that's troubling to you?
I don't know. I don't know. Everything seems to be good. I mean, my health is not good. I got to do stuff. I guess, okay, here's the problem that I've always had. And again, I don't even know if it's a problem, but I do lack discipline. Like, I don't like rules. I don't like anybody telling me what to do. And if somebody gave me some advice, like if you gave me some advice, for instance, I wouldn't want to take it. I'd want to push back and say no.
Could you give me an example of when that's happened?
Not really, because I never take anybody's advice. I don't know. Well, no, that's not true. I mean, I listen to my wife, and I guess maybe I don't know if it's a control thing. I want to be in control of my life, and maybe there's some anxiety about the fact that you know it's finished. I went to a funeral yesterday.
Okay, tell me about that. How was that for you?
Well, I mean, it's not a fun thing, but I was alone. I didn't talk to anybody except for the daughter and the son-in-law of the woman who died, who I didn't know very well, but I felt I knew her better after the funeral. They said such wonderful things about her, and I kept imagining my own funeral and who would come and what they would say about me, and then I thought, oh, I've got to plan this so that there's no burden on my wife, and I picked up the pamphlets from the funeral home and added that to my to-do list of, I got to be prepared, I got to pay for it, I got to map everything out, so I just don't want my wife having to, it would be so difficult for her to deal with that, and maybe the same for me, and so I guess I was thinking about death.
And was that troubling?
No, not really. Like, I didn't feel like I'm going to die suddenly, but I wanted to be prepared, but I don't know what I felt. Just, you know, a reminder, yeah, we're going to die. It's going to be an end. And there's that reminder that, okay, then you've got to make the most of now. You can't waste anything. And maybe that's what it gets to. Maybe I wonder if this podcasting is just filling it. It's a fight against death. That I want to be here. I want to be heard. I want to stay amongst the living. Am I doing this so there's a record of me after I'm gone? Is there some insecurity there? I don't know.
That's a very interesting observation that you've tied the two together, the death and the living. Tell me about the podcasting. What is it that you really like about it?
Oh, well, there's a nowness to it. I mean, that's the part I love the most, because the lesson in life, what the Buddhists teach us, what we know is true is that you only live once, you only live now, and we spend so much of our lives worrying about, oh, tomorrow and the things we have to do, and our lists, and what we didn't do yesterday that we should have done, and all that crap. But in fact, there's only this cutting edge now that we're flowing through life. We're like the river. We're in movement, and we just want to wake up in that moment and be alive, be clear, feel it, sense it, know it. And sometimes I get that feeling when I'm podcasting because it's so much in the now.
It's very interesting. It sounds as if it's serving you very well.
Well, that's the thing. I think it is. And I don't think other people understand that. I hear people say, well, how does he do it? Like every week. And I couldn't talk for that long. It's like I have no choice in the matter. I have to. It's like a dog pissing in a fire hydrant. You know, I've just got to mark my territory. I'm here. This is it.
Okay. So, having said all that, do you feel any different about the podcasting?
I see. I know there's a good side, and I don't know why I always question it. I don't know why I go through that exercise. And in the end, I mean, the truth speaks for itself. I just keep doing it. So obviously, there's no real issue, real problem. And I think it is true about wanting to be in the moment. That's the way I podcast is you don't plan. Sorry. It's like this conversation I'm having with you. It's not planned. It just unfolds in the moment. And so it's a living example of being in the now, of being present, of experiencing whatever is going on just in that microsecond. And that's, it's quite wonderful.
You sound a bit like a podcast evangelist, like you think maybe other people should be doing this.
Well, I think they should. I think people should express themselves. I think we're beaten into submission by our culture, by society, by television, by all these forces out there that tell us what to think, what to wear, what to know, who to be. And I think we have to fight back and reassert our individuality, our unique personalities, and be yourself, however crazy and fucked up you might be. Just be there.
That's very well put. Sometimes I think we're sitting in the wrong chairs, and perhaps you could be the counselor here, the therapist.
Well, thank you. I do feel a little better that we've just gone through that exercise.
Would you like to stop now? And come back to this some other time?
I think I would. I think I would like to just put an end to this. I feel very, very calm. Very satisfied. And all the anxiety I had about thinking I should be doing something else, going somewhere else, it's just gone. I feel that I am exactly where I'm supposed to be. And there isn't anything else that I really need to be doing now. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Always changing things makes me wish. big old tomb on grass. Ooh, when I see the 5 o'clock news, I don't want to go up. They comb their hair and shine their shoes, I don't want to go up. Stay around my old hometown, I don't want to put no money down. I don't want to get me a big old loan, work them fingers to the bone.
Okay. Sorry if this gets a little bit noisy. I'm in Thomson Park on a Tuesday afternoon. Trucks rolling by. Looks like a bunch of school kids here on some kind of an outing. And I'm sitting on a bench I'm not usually opting for. It's under a tree. It's just beautiful, huge tree. But it's kind of in a noisy corner of the park. I don't know why I picked here. Maybe I'm going to have to move. But I wanted the shade. It's hot. We're in the middle of a bit of a heat wave here in Toronto. And it's not bad. Aircon has been on full for the past few days at home, and it makes it very livable. So, I got to talk to you. I was just listening on the way here to Anthony Marco put out a podcast yesterday, and it was kind of funny. It was he admitted, he self-described it as kind of inane rambling. And that's fine, because basically what he was saying is, hey, anybody can podcast whatever they want, anytime they want. And sometimes you just feel like talking. And he said, it's not even about listening and who's listening or if they're listening, but sometimes you got to talk to your peeps. And that's definitely where I'm at today. It's so funny. Anthony Marco and I are very different. Well, okay, we're both tall, all right. But politically, maybe some differences there, although we'd probably be surprised at how much common ground we actually have. But age difference, 20 years, of course. But the way he talked, like, about podcasting and encouraging other people to do it and how happy he was that Mark and Bob and Dave are, I could relate just so clearly. Like, I know exactly where he's coming from. I know how important this can be. You've heard me talk about it a lot on this podcast, too. So, anyway, enough. We're not going to talk about Anthony Marco on this. We're just saying it's kind of neat how you can relate and how some of you who maybe are listeners but aren't podcasting pick up all this in a very different way. You're maybe hearing through a different filter. I don't know, but it doesn't matter. But what does matter is, you're my peeps. This is my comfort zone, and I'm telling you that because today I was back in class. You know I'm taking the counseling courses. You hear all about it on this podcast. And I felt so estranged, so disconnected from the rest of the class. Like, they came in, and there's one woman in particular who doesn't like me, period. Hasn't from day one, has not once smiled at me, greeted me, talked to me, or done any role plays with me. The only one in the class I haven't had any conversation except for one that was very unpleasant. But that aside, I get along with most of the people in the class. It's a very interesting group. But today I just felt so apart from all of them. Like, I didn't want to hear their stories. I didn't want to hear their laughter. I did not want to hear about what they saw on television last night that made them laugh. I thought it was just all juvenile, and I wanted to get into the heavy, serious stuff about this course, and that's my problem. And on the very same flip side, they would not have wanted to talk to me or hear me talk about existentialism or why I love Carl Rogers, because, hey, no, you know, that's for the course, but right now we're just talking. And sometimes small talk just fucking drives me up the wall. I felt angry, annoyed. Like, it's amazing the change, you know. And I've only got another week and a half left of this course. And it's not going to come back. Like, I'm done. I'm finished. And that's okay, too. That's okay, too. But it made me feel, well, who do I connect with? Who do I really relate to? And it's you. You, the Dixon James listeners, you, the podcast listeners out there, you people who I can share myself with and not have to defend it. Like, there's the Scarborough dude doesn't even get close to coming to that class. We do role plays and stuff, and But I am all serious. Hey, I'm in it because I want to learn something. I want to be able to be a counselor at the end of all this. And it's just a weird disconnect. But here on the Dixon James podcast, I have the luxury of saying whatever the fuck I want and not giving a fuck if you don't get it. And if you don't, you don't like it, fuck off. Okay, for starters. Can't really do that in the class. Can't tell somebody, oh, shut up and quit talking about your goddamn stupid fucking TV show. Can't do that, you know? You make enemies that way. And it's okay, you know? We're just being ourselves. And I guess one of the passages randomly I came across in the Carl Rogers book was about loving yourself. And we all know the importance of that. And sometimes that's a very hard thing to do because we're always trying to be better or fix ourselves or find our own faults or compare ourselves to somebody else. And you really do have to love yourself, including all your flaws and faults, all the things that are bad about you, you know? That's a really important step to take, and maybe not such an easy one. One of the things that's kind of bugging me a little bit, we have to write a paper's counseling stance, and I got really excited the other day. You have to write this initial position. Where are you as a counselor? What are your foundation of your beliefs? Because to be an effective counselor, you've got to be who you are. You've got to be comfortable in your own skin. You can't be faking it, you know, put a pipe in your mouth and get a new pair of glasses and put on an old blazer with patches and pretend you're somebody different. You got to be you and true to your values, true to yourself. You don't project all the you onto your clients, of course, but you've got to be comfortable and accepting, and you have to build your, I was going to say business, because that's what I would like to do, but your practice, let's say, based on your fundamental, deeply held and cherished values. And so the other day when we have to do a rewrite at the end of the term, on, well, okay, now where are my values as a podcaster? What's my position now? Has it changed during the 4 weeks of this course? You know, have I seen things differently? And in my case, I'd say yes. I've learned certainly many, excuse me, new techniques of approaches, the sort of cognitive behavioral approaches of where you just want to focus on, well, never mind the past. Okay, that may be an issue, but how is that affecting your present right now and your vision of the future? Because that's what we got to work on. And assigning homework. So they're besides just the Carl Rogers person-to-person, accept people for who they are, sometimes you have to be a little bit proactive and work with people to work on real behavioral changes. And that's one of the things I'll put in my paper. Okay, I recognize I can have this position, but if there are practical skills out there for, you know, helping somebody who's very shy, you can't just do the whole thing in their head. You've got to deal with the emotions, and then you've got to get to the behavior. Okay, so what are you going to do when you go out tomorrow? Like, I always, in my head, I'm always saying, okay, when you go into your local Loblaws or whatever thrift store, wherever it is you do your shopping, talk to the cashier. Don't bother her when she's busy with a long conversation. Don't, you know, say, hi, how are you? You know, be natural about it. Try. Sorry, that was a bad imitation, but smile in a casual, you know, whatever, passing comment. You know, I like your necklace. Busy? No, that's wrong, too. You know what I mean? It's got to be in the flow, in the moment. It can't be too rehearsed. But for some people, that would be a challenge. I know, I pay my money. I'm rattled enough having to deal with this person and go through this interaction. There's people behind me, and what if I drop my change? Oh my God, take a breath, slow down, smile. That's all. Okay, here's your homework. Just smile at somebody. Bam, that simple. And tell me about it next week. Anyway, as I was thinking about where do I stand in podcasting, what are my values, and I had stated earlier, well, I believe in client-centered or person-to-person-centered therapy, as, you know, based on the research and teachings of Carl Rogers, going way back to the 50s. And also, I am an existentialist in the sense that you've got to be living more or less in the present moment, but you're redefining yourself through your actions. You don't have excuses for your bad behavior. You can't blame everything your parents did to you when you're 6 years old. You've got to move forward. And you have the freedom to redefine who you are. You have this freedom. That's existentialism. And with that, of course, is the responsibility to do something about it. Don't just shrug your shoulders and say, I can't. No, you can. So let's put that into action. So there's a whole existentialist approach to it. And then the third piece, I may have mentioned it before, but hey, do you pay attention all the time? Are you listening? Or some of you on fast forward already? Mark, Anthony. The Zen Buddhist outlook of living in the present moment and not living about, you know, going over the past or dreaming about the future, but living out there in the now. That's when you give that smile to the clerk, the cashier, you know. So as soon as I had that thought, I said, you know what, I'm going to go down to my library. And I knew in my mind I could picture the books I had. I could picture the cover. I knew they should be in my good sections of my library, in my bar, and within 2 minutes, I had my hands on the three books I am now, pause for dramatic effect, holding in my hand. Zen Buddhism, Selected Writings of D.T. Suzuki, and he is the one who taught, who really brought Eastern Buddhism to the West, and taught people like Alan Watts and others, and had a tremendous influence. And so that's the book I'm holding, an old paperback pocketbook. And there are passages from here about the direct method, talking about that you can't put words on Zen, right? Zen is that experience, that moment. And as soon as you try to label it, you're out of it. In fact, the truth of Zen is the truth of life. And life means to live, to move, to act, not merely to reflect it. There it is, you know? That's it. It's to live, to be in that present moment. It is not the most natural thing for Zen, therefore, that its development should towards acting rather than living its truth instead of demonstrating and listening in words, that is to say, with ideas. No, it's not about explaining. It's just sort of getting it, that reawakening, you know? Anyway, I'm not going to go on too much. He's a little dense. But the fact that I could pull down that book, and this is the thing that I'm thinking, I can't have this conversation with anybody in my class. I can with you, the Dixon James listeners, and you'll tune out if you want. Second book in my hand right now, $1.25, called Human Potential Book, Person to Person, The Problem of Being Human, Carl Rogers and Barry Stevens, another person from that day. And the page I've got bookmarked from a classic book. Classics was a bookstore in Montreal way before. I was surprised to see my cousin's address, 2166 Maison Ave, apartment 209, the Gloss Apartments. Holy shit, like we are talking, this bookmark is, you know, 45 years old. That's amazing. Anyway, it's on a page, The Facilitation of Inner Freedom. I think I've jumped ahead a little bit in this book. Okay. Hello? What's going on? Stop. Sorry, had a little bit of a... I pushed a button when I shouldn't have. The facilitation of inner freedom. I don't know that that's the point. And I guess it doesn't really matter. We're talking about the person. Learning to be free is the section here. The client moves from fearing his inner feelings and defending himself against them to letting these feelings be and exist in him to as accepted elements of himself. From being out of touch with some aspects of his experiences, he moves towards a freer inner communication. That's what we do on the Dixon James podcast, boys and girls. You are witnessing exactly what I'm reading. A greater awareness of what is going on from moment to moment within. A client says, the real truth of the matter is that I'm not the sweet, forbearing guy that I try to make out I am. I get irritated at things. I feel like snapping at people, and I feel like being selfish at times, and I don't know why I should pretend I'm not that way. In other words, be accepting of who you are and don't try to live up to other people's expectations and values and projections, okay? I'm not going to go any further because I'm only giving you random samples to show that my problem is, these are very short papers we write. And if I go and pull out these quotes from three books that are not part of the text of this course, it may look an awful lot like I'm showing off and brown-nosing. Hey, look at me. I got books on those things. I've had these books for 40 years. And I don't want to come across that way. God, my imitations are really bad today, aren't they? The third book in my hand right now, Black Cover, Green Circle, Existentialism and Human Emotions by Jean-Paul Sartre. And what have I got? Bookmark here, the brand new bookmark from the Canada Japan Society. Actually, things will be as man will have decided they are to be. So there you go. Things will be as man will have decided they are to be. We define ourselves. We make ourselves. So it's a good book. I bought it, again, university days. And I won't dig any other quotes. There's no real reason to do it. I'm not trying to show off to you, but even if I did, that wouldn't matter. I'm just trying to say that I feel I'm so glad to be taking these courses now, reconnecting with the undergraduate student I was 40 years ago, and be, I guess, just reconnected with who I was, you know, because we shed our skins, we sort of die off, we become new people. I think about the guy who was in Nigeria. That guy was a boy. He loved to drink when he was over there. That was me, and just go crazy, and it was fun. It was a country where you could do. There were no bounds to your behavior. That's a tremendous freedom. You don't often get that. The only other time I had that was up in the Yukon when I was drunk 24/7. So that also meant there didn't have to be any boundaries. But then there's the other self, the one in Japan, and finding the woman I wanted to marry and marrying, and then, boy, putting on that suit and going off to work and being that salaryman and doing stuff, being serious about it. And it's, I guess it's as if looking back now, that was kind of remote from, boy, who was that guy going to Sir George Williams in Montreal? That's somebody different all these years. And now all that time has passed, and here I am, a house in the suburbs, you know, raving on about feeding the birds with two grown sons. That's a different whole set of feelings altogether. So I don't know if I told you anything in there, but I know that I did what I had to do. As Anthony Marco mentioned, I talked to you. I hope you're enjoying this journey, coming along with me for the ride. I think there is some kind of direction. Last thought I'm going to share with you. You know that wonderful little state sometimes you can wake up early and then just sort of drift off back to sleep and then wake up again. And you might have some really vivid dreams just before you wake up for the final time. And I dreamt I was talking to somebody about Dixon Janes, and I was encompassing the whole of Dixon Janes, the 20-year zine, the Dixon Janes newsletter, and the podcast. And the conclusion I came to in this dream with whoever I was talking to, well, it's got to be good. It's got to be good. And it was a mixed feeling. It was like, yeah, but it's not all good. You've never always felt it was good. Every issue of the magazine you sent out, you always knew it could have been better. You wanted more. And this podcast is the same. And it could be more. It should be more. It should be more focused. I should, you know, be teaching something, maybe, maybe not. But I should be honest. And then, before the dream ended, another voice said, fuck you. It's good the way it is. It's good the way it is because I'm doing my fucking best. Fuck you if that's not good enough. Fuck you. Oh, you know, it feels good to do that sometimes. I recommend it highly. Get it out of your system, because basically you're pushing right back. You're pushing back against those forces that are pushing at you. Every fuck you back is for the person who's trying to undermine your confidence, your sense of self, your well-being. And you just say, fuck you. You don't like this. Stop fucking listening. Piss off. Right? That's really what you got to do. So I guess I'm going to wind it down there. I've got a son at home who's in considerable pain and on some heavy-duty painkillers that we're a little concerned about from some surgery he had yesterday. And while I'm waiting in the hospital for him to come out of surgery, my other son is messaging me from Thailand on his last few days. So it was kind of a neat connection, and that's one more piece of the puzzle. Holy shit. In spite of all this journey and where it started and how rocky it was, especially that 70s period back in Vancouver, I did end up being married, being a father, you know, raising a family more or less. And the journey is not over by a long shot, but I'm glad I'm on it. I'm glad I'm on it. So thank you. 20 minutes. I'll give you a song, and I'll be back a little bit later. This was the best I could possibly do today because it is just what it is. Bye for now. My voice. I'm feeling like I'm in some cheap spy novel. I'm sitting currently in the front seat of my car in the most expensive part, or one of the most expensive parts of Toronto, right opposite Upper Canada College, very near the residence of the Consul General of Japan, to which I was invited tonight, to his home, to welcome the new Japanese ambassador to Japan. No, to Canada. Japanese ambassador to Canada, sorry. Now listen, Mountain Mama, Mountain Mona, friend of Chub Creek Dave's, excuse me, this may appear like a bit of a drunken rant. Actually, I'm just trying to sober up. So if you want to fast forward past this part, as you like to do when I'm in the Eglinton Gold parking lot, you just go right on ahead from this point on, okay? The rest of you, stick around. I'm really not that drunk. I'm just trying to convince myself it's okay to drive home. I got to tell you, I'm not going to get many more invitations like this, if any, and I really felt it tonight. This is all as a result of my resigning my post as President of Canada Japan Society. I got to come to this one last invite, mainly for artists and professors, it seemed. It was a different group. There's a bit of a magical spell, the way they come up with their guest list for various events. And our little organization, our humble little Canada Japan Society, gets to appear on a few of them. So I got here, and you guaranteed great alcohol, beer, wine, sake, scotch, excellent food, unbelievable, like the fresh sushi, and then just, I don't know when the last time I've had roast beef as tender and as delicious. When it's roast beef that you can eat with chopsticks, you know, a big slab, but you can eat it with chopsticks because it just pulls apart. Wow, that is good stuff. So anyway, I came in, a little hot, one of the earlier guests to arrive, parked my car because I had to drive here because it's way the hell out of the way. And start off with a cold Japanese beer. And you got, you know, servants, basically, bringing you a drink. Nice people. I've seen them for years. They're very friendly, you know. You get to know them. But, bam, what would you like? Okay, here you go. And, that's my lights on. Oh, there shouldn't be any lights on the car, should there? This seems odd. Ah, there we go. God damn, now I've got that overhead light. It's conspicuous. It's shining on me in my bright white shirt. Took my tie and my jacket off. Had a beer. Then saw some really good wine going around. Okay, I'll just switch to some red wine, thank you. And then dinner came out. Just a little bit of white. Yeah, that'd be nice, thank you. And of course, they come by and they fill your glass again. They keep an eye on you. And I got out to a table out on the deck. This is the same balcony where a few years ago I got to meet, very briefly, but to, have the honor of meeting the Japanese emperor and his wife, the empress of Japan. Same house. So it's a kick, you know. This is, hey, what are you doing here? You, Scarborough dude, you're just some piss-ass drunk from the only cafe. What are you doing in this crowd? Well, it's also something that I do from time to time. And so got into a conversation with professors on baseball, Japanese baseball. Some very interesting people, very well informed. am I sounding pretentious? Because, God, I don't want to sound that way at all. I'm not one of them. I told them, hey, I'm the least important. I introduced myself a couple of times as the least important person here, but probably one of the happiest. And I don't know if that was that far off the mark, because, hey, I got nothing to prove. This is a freebie. This is a good one. But I got into very deep conversation. I probably spent at least 20 minutes one-on-one with the ambassador to Japan. Well, that's a big deal, folks. You don't get that all the time, you know. And talked about how much Japan changed my life and how grateful I was to it. And then somebody else in the consulate got into a really in-depth conversation about Canada-Japan relationships. And, you know, you're speaking from the heart. And damn it, it's nice. And I do feel it's not false when I say how much Japan changed my life and how important I think it is that Canada and Japan continue to build and develop and to strengthen good ties, you know, economically, obviously, but culturally, but just on a person-to-person level. It's just, the world needs more of that. And I buy into it 100%. So anyway, that's all I'm telling you. I'm bragging a little bit, okay? All right, I'm bragging. End of the night. Oh, of course, halfway through the meal, I see my good friend Ted Goosen from York University, professor of Asian studies, is knocking back the sake. Well, geez, I'm not going to be left out. So would you mind bringing me a glass, a little sake, thank you? So a couple of those, and then you're really, boy, nicely toasted. And Jeff, Etobicoke Joe, says, you got to try the whiskey. And I look over, and there's a bottle of nice 12-year-old Nika Japanese whiskey. I don't know which particular one it was, whether there are versions of it or what. But man, oh man, good, strong, big shot of that in a nice little glass, no ice. And man, that was nice. I mean, I haven't enjoyed a glass of whiskey that much in a very long time. And that's why I can't drive home. That's why we're talking now, because I just can't fucking turn on the motor and start motoring along. 401, not even a chance. I'll do Eglinton. A lot more traffic, but lower speed and maybe a little bit safer. So there you have it. Just a little bit of an update on a Wednesday night of just, you know, you, because you've been following along the story, me talking about retiring, stepping down from the Canada-Japan Society, and here is maybe one last piece, because, man, when I looked around that room and I saw all the people, man, if I'm never invited back, I have really given up something really good, because this is, holy shit, this is really something special, you know, this being among such a crowd, and I got to tell you, the consul generals, the ambassadors, the, you know, all the other people associated, you know, the first runner-up and everybody else associated with the consulate, they are so professional. They are so good at what they do. Very well-educated people, very well-spoken, and very, very interesting to listen to and to you know, to engage in conversation with. So I guess that's all I'm going to share with you from this point. I got to get my way home. I need water. So, boys and girls, Scarborough Dude from a location I think I have in the past, under the same circumstances, talked to you from. Signing out. And we'll be back soon. Take care, one and all. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Signing out.
I'd like to thank you all for coming here today. You all know me. I am Don Lindon of Ask Lindon and Three Blind Mice. I'd like to make you an offer you can't refuse. Please consider subscribing to
Dicks and Janes,
the podcast of my good friend,
the Scarborough Dude,
and making a substantial financial contribution toward the smooth running of the show and the acquisition of a suitable family villa in Sicily. In return, I will try and answer any questions you may have, and also I pledge to protect your families from the Santini boys.
Well, here we go. Last leg of our journey on this particular podcast. Got just 10 minutes left if I don't include another song. Here at Bluffers Park, as you can tell, Friday morning. And I've got on my lap Person to Person, The Problem of Being Human by Carl Rogers and Barry Stevens. Another book from 1967 that I've kept in my library. I just mentioned it earlier. And oh, God, how I love this stuff. And what's, again, so interesting, it may not mean anything to anybody else but me, but this being able to go close this circle and reconnect with my 24, 25-year-old self, 23, 22, back in my university days in Montreal, with the same ideas, the same textbooks, you know, that meant so much to me then. I'm just going to pull out a couple of random quotes here because it just fits in with so much of what I believe. And right now I'm in the process of finalizing my paper on where do I stand, you know, what's my foundation as a counselor. The current trend in education is away from freedom. There are tremendous pressures today, cultural and political, for conformity, docility, and rigidity. Of course, in those days, the Russians were the enemy, and they just wanted to train people. And he's saying there was just no movement whatsoever. The whole concept of inner freedom was not of value. Now, of course, these ideas, you know, are sort of coinciding with the hippie movement, which came out. But again, within the hippie movement, there was one hell of a lot of conformity. The choice of drugs, the choice of music, the choice of costume. So I can't give them too much credit. In closing, I would like to point out that for the most part, modern culture does not operationally want persons to be free, in spite of many ideological statements to the contrary. Now that, it's so true then, 1967, when this was published, probably written earlier, and so true now, that this concept of freedom, no, you know. Both of the two main streams of modern life, Western and communist, are extremely fearful of and ambivalent about any process which leads to inner freedom. Nevertheless, it's my personal conviction that individual rigidity and constricted learning are the surest roads to world catastrophe. It seems clear that if we prefer to develop flexible, adaptive, creative individuals, we have a beginning knowledge as to how this may be done. So this is his views on client-centered therapy and accepting people for who they are and sort of teaching people to accept their inner feelings, you know, and not all the shoulds or what my mother told me or anything else. And it's just so wonderful because, again, this is exactly what's going on in the class I'm taking this week that I can't seem to share with anybody else. Talking about what makes a counselor. And this is stuff I would love to do, put into a paper or a talk sometime. Maybe if I ever get up the... organize my thinking and ideas enough to do something like try and do a presentation at Northern Voice. I'm gonna jump into that new topic. The more genuine and congruent the therapist is in the relationship, the more probability there is that change in personality in the client will occur. I'm going to use that quote in my paper today. There's a thing that you sometimes pick up in, or maybe I won't call it bitterness, but a little part of me that's angry sometimes for not having recognition. And I think it's an anger at myself for maybe not doing more to sell myself, for maybe constantly underselling, which is sort of a family trait. You may say, hey, dude, all you do is brag about how great you are. What the hell are you saying? But that's there are conflicted emotions around that whole thing. God, I had it in my hand just a minute ago. What is it that I'm seeing? Maybe, for example, this program I do with the students who are coming next month. Holy shit, do I have to get busy on that and find my last couple of host families, etc. I've been doing that for 20 years, and it's a remarkable program. Like 20 young, impressionable 16-year-old girls come from Japan, have the time of their life, and perhaps change maybe a little bit the direction of their life. They develop a sense of confidence that it actually has an impact on them through the experiences we provide. Now, I do this as a team. I'm sort of coordinating it, but of course I do it by choosing good people, basically. That's what it comes down to. Surround them with good people, and they'll feel comfortable and safe, and they'll grow. So there's a similarity, in a way, to making them feel good about themselves and their capabilities and so on. One of the things that maybe bothers me is I don't feel I'm getting enough recognition. I'm making money from this, but I honestly feel, damn it, somebody, CBC, National Film Board, somebody should just be stepping in and observing and finding out this little piece of history. Who are those girls giving? And they'd say, well, there's lots of study tours, but not like this one, goddammit. Taking them off to camp, getting them in canoes, getting them on the high roads, getting them to Quebec City to have a day of excursions on their own. All the elements. And what is it? What impact do they have on the Canadians they stay with? How many Canadians just keep coming back every summer? Oh, yeah, I'll take two girls. They're great, you know. How does this impact their lives? What do they understand now about Japan? Maybe I'm going on about this because I was at the Japanese consulate and I'm just another businessman, although one person in particular, I have the feeling he's been taking notes, was right up to date with what I'm doing. I want more recognition, and maybe it's true for this podcast because there's a part of me that thinks, holy fuck, who else is being as honest as I am out there? A lot of people are. A lot of people are trying. A lot of people would like to. And I'm trying to blaze a trail. I'm trying to say, hey, speak your inner self. This is therapeutic. And I'm trying to tie all the pieces together. Maybe that's a mistake, but I don't think so. I'm trying to see how my development, my growth as a counselor, to maybe actually one day sit down and help somebody with their own personal struggles and growth, is being influenced by this podcast, by me revealing my inner self, by me sort of expressing my doubts, my fears, my anxieties, my anger, all those feelings. It's not just a screaming rant. There's a purpose to say, oh shit, I hate that when the time runs out and you're just getting warmed up. But hey, as I said at the start, there'll be another one very soon after this. I'd love to go back into this book, but there's a million quotes from Rogers that give me, I guess, the support. I've got a number of heroes, as you know, Rogers and Henry Miller, and not so much Kerouac, although he had an impact at the time. But this isn't about that. This is about the importance of being who you are and accepting. There's a passage in this book, which I can't find now, but about just, it's okay to be angry and hate people and be frustrated and accept that in yourself. Don't try and be this perfect person. And maybe sometimes I do. Sometimes I want to appear that I'm at the level, hey, guess what, boys and girls? I finally got all my shit together and I'm perfect and fine. No, that ain't happening. You know, I am not reaching Satori. This is an ongoing struggle. I think I'm getting a little closer sometimes. I think I'm getting a little better at understanding some of my feelings and conflicts. I've started to unload this in the current paper I'm submitting for my reflections on this course, and I finally owned up to how pissed off I am at the rest of the class and how often I just want to say, oh, shut the fuck up, for Christ's sake, to some of the people in that class who I find inane and boring and, oh, dear, aren't you supposed to be Mr. Nice Guy and accepting of everybody and all their flaws? No, there's sometimes when people just fucking piss you off. You're right? So you want to get to that, and you want to accept that about yourself. It's not a character flaw to be short-tempered or to hate people. I think the key here that Rogers points out, it's how you release it. You know, if you just let yourself fly off the handle and hurt somebody, no, that's not helping you. But admit that you have that feeling. And once you have it and you accept it, that maybe it's diffused a little bit and it's just not as important as it was. And after you've vented through a podcast or, screaming at some tree in the great outdoors, you just feel a little better and just not so angry at that person or thing or whatever. Anyway, we're over our mark. Oh, damn. Just getting cranked up here. But thanks for listening, as always, to the Dixon James Podcast. Always a treat. Send me a tweet, drop me an email, post a comment, and I appreciate all those things. It just gives me that little extra oomph to keep on going. So, boys, girls, Dixon James 407, ending, winding down. On a very positive note here, and I'm going to race home now, put this out, send it to you, and then get on with the papers I have to write, and then find the hotel. Oh my God, the shit I got to do just to make a living. So thank you, thank you, thank you, and bye-bye. Quick P.S. while I'm at the traffic light of St. Clair and Midland or somewhere in Brimley. I just realized the point I wanted to make in that last ramble when I was whining about not getting the recognition I think I deserve for my work, for my podcasting, for all kinds of things. The point I really wanted to make that I thought about this morning was that it's my fault. I don't promote myself that way, and if there are any shortcomings, it's not due to lack of response on anybody else's part. It's due to me not taking that extra step to say, yeah, it's basically a lack of faith in myself that I do really have something of value to offer, that too often I am sabotaging my own efforts, okay? I'm the enemy, not you, not the general public out there who ignores me. I'm the enemy, and I just have to have a little bit more belief. I have to be bolder to take that extra step. I bet you it's true of some of you too, okay? Very important I get that point, because that's really what I wanted to tell you about, okay? Not all that other shit. All right, that's it. We're done. Whew. Thank God we got that one in. Woo-hoo! That's what it was all about. All right, bye for now.